Agents Podcast.
This episode of the Lab Grown Agents Podcast is brought to you by RedX, the complete real estate prospecting solution. RedX offers high-quality lead data on expireds, for sale by owners, vacant rental property owners, pre-foreclosures, and geo leads, the number one data source for neighborhood prospecting. You can also filter, organize, and call your leads inside Vortex, the all-in-one lead management platform, free with any lead subscription. With RedX, you get more than just phone numbers. You get all the tools you need to connect with more homeowners who are actively looking to sell. RedX is offering our listeners $150 off. Just go to redx.bz/LCA. That's redx.bz/LCA to sign up for RedX today. On my continued quest to interview more real estate agents that are actually living in the trenches, struggling through this disastrous time in our industry, now with NAR verdicts and gosh, potential social media app bannings and no inventory and high rates. I mean, shit, could it get any worse? I don't know. And frankly, I don't care because I'm just going to continue to navigate, can control what I can control. And that's part of the reason why I'm bringing on another real estate agent, somebody who's doing it every single day, because I was introduced to Trevor not that long ago and as someone who's doing things different. And so as he and I have been talking off air, we might go down a couple of different rabbit holes today, but I think most importantly, what I want Trevor to share with you is how he sustains his business in today's current environment. So first things first, Trevor Halpern, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I want you to start here. You're a real estate agent based out of the Phoenix, Arizona area, Metro. Tell us about yourself. What led you to where you are today? Kind of give us your background in the business and whatnot.
Yeah. I think I arrived at a real estate profession similarly to how a lot of people do. They kind of just end up there, right? Or like, oh, that sounds like fun, or I'm going to give that a try. I mean, I entered the workforce right on the front end of the Great Recession. So I graduated from law school. I knew going into law school, I didn't want to practice law. And so I was like, well, what else can I do? And had an opportunity to sell real estate in Mexico. So I went down and did that. And then, you know, people were cashing out their equity in their home in the States and bringing down a big bag of money to Mexico and throwing it on the table and buying places. And so it was a lot of fun for about 6 months. And then the market shifted. And so we realized pretty quickly that this isn't sustainable. So came back to the States, did a couple of other things. And, you know, as someone with a professional degree, not practicing in that profession, you find it difficult to find employment. Sometimes people are like, that's cool. You got a cool degree, but I don't really know what to do with you type thing. And so after it was my third layoff, my wife at the time, ex-wife, looked at me and was like, don't go work for someone else, do something for you. And so went down a path of trying to start a business and needed to raise money. And then it was a lunch with my dad and my dad's been a practicing attorney for a long time. He said, why, like me and my law partners are going to be buying and selling homes. Like, why don't you get your real estate license, see what happens. And so I really thought about it and I did. And I think my dad was thinking like part-time, can I come on, son, pull yourself up by the bootstraps type thing. And I just dove right in because it was a combination of, one, I could use my law degree, the contract, negotiating, trying to think a couple steps ahead, playing chess, not checkers type thing. And then a couple of the other businesses that I've been involved with surrounded business development and marketing. So I could bring together business development, marketing, and the law and combine it into this thing where I've always been a connector. And so connecting people, and this time I was like, man, if I just make connections, as I like to say, let's weave a web and see what gets caught in it. And all of a sudden transactions kind of started falling out of the bottom of this thing. And I was like, whoa, I can do this. So I was like, okay, put on my hat. Today I'm a realtor. And that was, you know, 13 plus years ago and I haven't looked back. So that's how I arrived at the practice, but it is a network based. I'm 95% based on people that I know, repeat referral, friends, family, that sort of stuff.
How much? Say that again.
95%.
95%. All right.
The other 5% are like people that walk through open houses, that sort of stuff.
Really interesting. Yeah. Okay. We'll dig deeper into that. But before we do, where did you, so
you got your law degree, which is interesting. Tristan also, that's his background too. And yeah. And so why would someone, this is just a personal question, why would someone say, I'm going to go through the headache of, because, and let me preface this by saying I was an advertising degree. I shifted out of it because of the legal classes required that you have to take for advertising and moved to like media communications because it was easier, because I was like, I'm going to get the piece of paper. I might as well have fun doing it. And legal classes are not the fun way. So why would any human decide I'm going to go to college, get my law degree or go to law school or whatever it is you did. And I don't want to be a lawyer. So I'm just doing it for fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it might have been a period of psychosis. maybe I haven't gotten out of it. I don't know. But no, really, it was like, you know, my dad obviously being a practicing attorney, my sister who's graduated from law school the year before I came in. So she was like, bye. And then I came in. I think it was kind of like a familial thing. Hey, well, I guess let's do this. And, you know, I had looked at doing an MBA versus law degree. And at the time, there were no like part-time law programs. Like you had to be all in. Like they limited the amount of work. Like you could only work this many hours. There weren't night programs. They're not executive programs. And so I was like, well, I can go back and get an MBA. There's executive programs. There's night. So let me get the law degree. Let me see what I do with it. And then, you know, to your point, it was like I went in there knowing that I didn't want to practice. But by the end, I'd accepted a job as an attorney. And then literally my last semester of law school, like I couldn't pull myself out of bed. I was depressed. I didn't know that I was depressed because I'd never been depressed. And then one day I woke up and I was like, oh, it's because you don't want to practice law. And you just accepted a job at a law firm being a trial attorney. And so I called and I was like, thank you so much. I'm not taking the job. Not only that, but I'm not going to practice law. And that was that. So I think I initially went to it for a couple of reasons. One, it's kind of what we did as a family. Mm-hmm. And then two, I knew it would be good to have in my back pocket for whatever approach in the future. And then three, I knew I couldn't go back and get it. So might as well just roll on through and go.
That's quite the feather in one's cap.
Yeah, it helps. You know, I always say that, you know, people think they're at some sort of informational disadvantage when they realize that I have a law degree. And I'm like, you know, I'll let them realize it. I'll let them think through that. Well, and I think sometimes strategically or whatever, I look at things maybe a little bit differently, or I can spot issues ahead of when most people are thinking of it, because I can see where the contract is going to fall apart or collapse. So it certainly has helped in everything I've done specifically with real estate.
So what you're saying is attorneys are not, in fact, intellectually superior?
No, yeah, I know plenty of them that are. I drink beers with a lot of those guys.
There's a lot of them that think they are, I think.
Yes, but... yeah, they'll tell you they are. Just ask them. Yeah.
That's funny. All right, so you shifted, and what was the draw to the Mexico thing? Because that sounded kind of cool and fun.
It was. So as I was nearing the end of law school, the woman that I married, my first wife, her stepdad was building high-rise condos in Mexico. And he was like, listen, one, what's your intention with my daughter? And then two, why don't you come down? I know you don't want to practice law. Why don't you come down to Mexico with me? I'll teach you what I know about developing and you can be my sales manager. So I said, that sounded great. So, and it's just right across the border from Arizona. It's a little town called Rocky Point. They were building high-rise condos like crazy then. And so I went down there and it was a great adventure for like 12, 13, 14 months. And I made some really good money. And I got some great experience. So it all worked out exactly the way it should have.
So it's not like what I was picturing it to be, which was like Cabo or Cancun or Puerto Vallarta. Nothing fun like that.
No, it's like literally people from Mexico City are like, what? Where? They consider that part of Mexico like totally the Wild West. Dirt road and horses. And it kind of is dirt road and horses.
So. Interesting. All right. So not quite as an exciting story as I had hoped for.
No, not pina coladas and Mai Tais. No. Dirty shrimp and...
right.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting. All right. So then that was pretty much the beginning, which led you to where you are today. So at what year did you get into residential real estate?
2011 was my first year. Yep.
Okay. So after the crash... Yep. And it was a moderate time then. It was decent. I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, 2012 was a pretty big year. And then we've had some bumps along the way until recently. So what has that journey looked like for you from start to, from where you started to where you are today?
Yeah. I am a big believer in incrementalism, right? So like from where I started, not knowing what I was supposed to be doing, not knowing, the only thing I knew is when I started and I started kind of showing some promise, I was approached by a bunch of agents that were like, hey, you want to join my team? Hey, you want to partner up? And I knew I didn't want to do that. This was my first foray into entrepreneurialism. And I had always thought that if I did things the way I wanted to and the way I thought that they would be good, that they would be good. And I was seeing that they were good. And so I was like, I don't want to team up. I don't want to give up. If I wanted to give up autonomy, I'm not going to do it to some guy that's not giving me a 401k and vacation and health insurance. Like if I just want to go work for someone, I'll just go get a corporate job, right? So I stuck to my guns in the beginning and kind of stumbled my way through. But like the whole time, I would just pick up on things, you know? So I think so often with in this day and age, it's so easy to see what everyone's doing. Oh, this guy's doing these 15 things, and to look at it and go, no way can I do that. Like that's overwhelming. Like you'll go to these seminars, you'll be writing stuff down, and then you get back and you look and you're like, dude, that's overwhelming. I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so just by virtue of doing the thing, I realized over time, I'm a huge incrementalism guy. If I go to a seminar and I write 15 things down, I will take one of those and I'll implement it. And not like right now, it's like, okay, I'm going to give myself, like we're at the end of Q2 or Q1. Hey, by the end of Q2, I want this one initiative active. Mm-hmm. And then I build it out and I build my timeline. I bring my team together and we figure out how we're going to approach it and we execute it. I don't try to do a bunch of stuff because my personality is such that if I find failure in what I'm doing, I'll go and I'll put a bullet in it real quick. And so if I have six initiatives going and none of them are pushing forward, none of them are going to happen because I'm sensing failure and I'm going to flee from it. So I give myself reasonable goals, not only, you know, that one thing that I'm implementing, but also like my annual goals. Like, hey, how much do I want to grow? Do I want to grow unit count? Do I want to grow volume? And I look at my business and I go, what's going to serve me? What's going to serve my family? And setting a goal that I think I can meet, instead of setting something where I feel like I'm behind the whole year, that to my psyche will crush it. I'm a perfectionist. So I try to fight it, but I am a perfectionist. So if I'm going to be perfect at something, just let me pick something this big and let me get it really, really good. And then I'm going to pick something else this big and get it really, really good. And all of a sudden I've got 12, 15, 20 components to my business that I operate monthly like clockwork, or that operate basically on their own, the spinning plates. And I just go and, you know, spin it, make sure it's level. And then every once in a while, a plate gets wobbling. I'll pull it down. I'll look at it and I'll go, I don't need this plate anymore. I don't even like doing that. And then just chuck it. So I'm constantly in this evolution of stuff that I like doing, stuff that works, small goals, attain the goal, examine it. Do I like it? Cool. Let's keep it going. If not, on to the next.
Yeah, that could send us a lot of places. And to unpack that, I think the question I want to ask you is when you mention, you know, going to an event, which now it's, you know, just events in general have become very diluted, mainly because of COVID and just the onslaught of Zooms, right? And online stuff, and everybody's an expert at something now and everybody's a coach, and you know that joke, right?
Yep.
I feel like that what you said is very accurate. I even say that when I speak, if I'm ever hosting an event, I tell people like, listen, you're going to take 5-10 pages of notes. And when you go home, it's going to overwhelm you. So key in on the one thing that you can do immediately and do that first and just key in on that and then move on to something else. So same mindset. But where I wanted to take that is, you know, I feel like our industry's gotten really, really bad ADHD. And probably more so if probably more so than any industry. And in other words, you know, shiny object syndrome. And yep. We see something, we chase it for a month or two. We see somebody doing it at the highest level. And there is probably a 99%+ failure rate at pretty much everything because people don't give it enough time. Based on what you're describing, you know, how would you advise an agent who falls into that bucket, which is most?
Yeah, I think one is give yourself some grace, right? I think so, like you see that shiny object you see that person having success with it and you go, man, I don't have that. I want to have that. And so you chase it and you try to recreate it. And so if you go, listen, I'm not that person. I don't need to be that person. I want to be this person. And you make a little bit of an adjustment and you set your own path. I think that's super important. Like my whole philosophy is always similar, but different. I'll key into what people are doing. I'll watch, I'll see, you know, I'll watch the listing videos. I'll watch the social media and I'll go, I really like the way that guy does it. And I think if I combine the way that guy does it with the way she does it, I think it'd be pretty cool. Or I go, I like that guy's look. I don't like his message. Here's how I would deliver the message. And that's how I deliver it. So I think pulling yourself out from the constant comparison that this business does. I mean, sales meetings, hey, who's top of the leaderboard? To people can look us up and see how much volume we do and how many deals, how many sides, right? It's this constant comparison. And for me, I found that the comparison pulled me down, not lifted me up. And I had to zoom in and go, hey, how does this move? How does like being, okay, let's take what he does and what she does and let's make it my own. How does that fulfill me? How is that going to impact my clients? And how is that ultimately going to trickle down into my family life? You know, what is it going to do for my kids, for my wife, for me? Is it going to improve my life? Are we going to have more deals, more money? So I try to just frame it in the small context of my own life, as opposed to that guy's doing something cool and I want to recreate it without even thinking, well, do I really want to do that? Is that really me? Can I do that? How does this impact me? What is my audience going to think? Right. I think sometimes with that ADHD and that squirrel and the shiny object and bouncing all over, you dilute yourself and you dilute what your message is. I mean, if you've got 60 agents in your marketplace cutting the same video, looking exactly the same, you know, news came out about NAR. Everyone's doing the same thing. One particular videographer capturing a massive amount of market share in our market. So everyone does the same thing, looking exactly the same, just in front of a different house. Like, how can I take that and look a little bit different, but be providing what my audience thinks is what they want to see? And quite frankly, maybe exactly what they want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I feel like right now that shiny object, and you and I are going to be at an event together at the time of this recording this week, right? And that shiny object is YouTube. And I feel like it's shiny, like most things, because everything you just described to me is like it's 10x'd because of social media. So because you see what you see on social, and it could be portrayed any which way, especially with somebody with any video skills, you're not really seeing the true picture. You're seeing the filtered picture. You're seeing what they want to show you. And I feel like YouTube is a great example, although it is arguably maybe one of the best platforms for effectiveness. Although anybody could argue that Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, because everybody's had different success on different platforms. But right now, YouTube's hot. And I don't know about you, Trevor, but as a social media guy, YouTube scares me for most people. It even scares me a little, and I know what the hell I'm doing. And so as we're going to be together later this week, but speaking specifically about that, about YouTube, what would be your advice to somebody who's sitting there saying, yeah, I've never really had a consistent presence on social. I haven't even really created that many videos, and by golly, I want to go do YouTube. What would you say to that person? I know what I'd say to them. I want to know what you'd say to them.
Yeah. And then I want to know what you'd say. But I would say, you know, to your point, I mean, it can be very intimidating, very scary. And I think the idea for me when entering something like that, YouTube's a giant, right? It's an elephant. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? So, okay, what component of YouTube do I want to attack and why? And even before that, if you zoom out further, by doing this, what do I expect to get? Or what messages am I delivering? Who's my audience, right? Sketch it out. Who do I want to connect with and why? And what content do I want to deliver and why? And which component of YouTube is a proper component for me to put those efforts into to get the result out that I want? And then hyper focus on it. You know, like I was saying earlier, take one thing and make it real shiny, polish the heck out of it, get it operating exactly the way you want, and then see where it goes. So that'd be my first. As I look at it, that's exactly how I pull it apart. Why, what audience, what effect, and which component is going to do it. And then do it really well and stamp and repeat and continue to do it and see if you can stand out. But, you know, I think the idea too is so many people are looking for that viral nature. Mm-hmm. I'm going to shoot this thing and it's going to go viral. I'm going to throw a hatchet in a listing video at a tree. I'm going to jump in a pool. People are going to love it. And it's going to go viral. I'm a strong believer that if you think something's going to go viral, it's not. It's the one thing you're like, dude, is my kid walking through a car show? I've got a buddy like this. My kid walking through a car show talking about supercars, and that thing has millions of views. People love it, right? It's not all the other real estate content. Hey, I'm in front of my listing at 123 Main Street. It's the thing that you don't expect. And if you're doing it enough, you've broken it down enough, and you know what your message is and your audience is, maybe you will go viral, but it's not by planning it. It's just by continuing to execute and put enough content out there.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we're chasing the wrong metric anyway. Virality means nothing other than to your ego. Very rarely will virality equal business, because usually virality has to come from outside of your market. Yep. It's just the way it works. And most of us and anybody listening to this podcast who's in the real estate profession typically does business in one very specific geographically targeted area. So virality really legitimately means nothing. I love that. I love that answer. So now I want to go deeper with you specifically, because you're doing things a little bit different. And, you know, you have this network-based business, you're 95%, you know, referral-based. And I know you're doing something that is really outside of a lot of people's, even on the table, it's not even in the conversation, which is this kind of a PR approach. So tell us about what you're doing and how that's working for you.
Yeah, what I've done is essentially that similar but different look, right? I am speaking to an audience about a particular topic that I think they're going to be interested in. And the way I arrive there is by taking Google search numbers. Hey, this particular search in relation to Arizona real estate is up 800%. This one's up 1400. This one's up 900. And I figure out which topic I like. And then we write a blog about it. We edit it. We polish it up, hand it off to a PR representative who floats it out to the news. Now that the news knows what people are looking for too. They are looking for their ratings to be as high as they can, which means delivering the people what they want. And so when we package up a story, creating an answer for a question that people are asking, and we hand it off to the news, they'll look at it oftentimes and go, hey, that's great. They'll take the blog and they'll either just post it on their website as an article, or they'll go, hey, we'd like to do a shoot with you to talk about this. Now, what I do with that shoot, let's say it's a minute clip on the news or 90 seconds. What we then do is we take that 90 seconds and we break it into what we call snackables, little 25, 15, 30 second clips, and post that across my social media platforms for the month. And so I look at that as two things. I look at the news and I say, it's providing me with content. I'm not having to write a script for a video. I'm not having to dig deep and go, what do I really want to talk about, and write a script and execute it. I'm creating content. The news is creating it for me, shot in, you know, 4K, whatever, like with real news cameras. And then, so I'm creating content and I'm creating credibility. When my network sees me on there, they see an article, they see me on the news, I'll get a picture of me on the news. Hey, saw this dude this morning, whatever. Or I asked my biggest referral source. I was like, hey, does it matter to you that I'm on the news? Does it, like, when you see it, are you like, hey, you know? He goes, are you in front of your computer? Oh yeah. He goes, all right, check out this email. He forwarded me an email that he sent to someone. And it was like, hey, this is the agent that I was talking about. He's an expert. Check it out here. Here's a link to this article. Here's a link to this news story. Like, he's dropping links in the emails. So I was like, credibility, nailed it. And it's leading to conversions on the other side. So content is being created for me. Obviously, there's effort that goes into getting to the point where the content is created. But then the credibility side of it, my network is seeing me and they're seeing me on the news, so they can hang their hat on me. They can go, that dude knows what he's talking about. That guy, if the news trusts him, whether you trust the news or not, mm-hmm. if the news trusts him, we can trust him, and we can also brag to our friends like, hey, this is the dude I was talking about. Give him a call, right? So I've kind of done an end around instead of taking what everyone's looking at and sitting in my conference room with the camera in front of me and shooting it real quick. I'm going on the news, they're interviewing me, and I'm splicing and dicing and laying out content throughout the month, answering the questions that people have been asking.
I mean, it's funny, the way you describe it. So on the surface, it sounds very different, but after you describe it, it's incredibly parallel.
Similar but different.
Yeah, yeah, very much so, because, but nobody's really thinking about that. So, you know, as you describe, you know, as I describe social to people sometimes that they don't understand, and I didn't understand it and understood it until I lived it, experienced it, which is that celebrity appearance. And there's this psychology that we as humans have because we all came up watching television, right? Now, of course, the younger generation's watching social, but there's just to the normal average human being, when they see somebody on a screen, there's a celebrity status. Whether you feel that way or not, it's the way it's perceived. And you're legitimately doing it the old fashioned way on television. But I would argue it's just as valuable and powerful. Cause like you said, it's perception, but I'll give you the example I give to everyone. Before I got into real estate, always seeing the same agent on a billboard for 10 years. My assumption was best real estate agent in this market. Then I got into the game, got to meet this person, and realized, wow, what a jackwagon. But because they had that name recognition and that celebrity status and they're on a billboard, I just assumed. And then I thought to myself, well, shit, if I think that way, everybody must think that way. And then it's kind of just trickled down to where we are with social. And I think anybody understanding the effects that come are powerful. You're doing it differently. So here's the question I have for you is, if I'm listening to this and thinking, gosh, thank God, Trevor, thanks for a new idea, because I hate TikTok. I hate social media. I would love to do this that way. How would somebody even get started in that arena?
Yeah, well, I think two things. One, you have to figure out what the content is that people want to see. And so for me, it's a digital content company. Like, hey, you tell me what the Google is saying. People get super honest with Google. You don't go on Google and like color your question. You're like, you go straight to it, right? Mm-hmm. So find either, I think there's a website too that's called askthepublic.com, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Answer the public.
There you go. So that would be figure out what the content is that people want. And then two, if you want to go down the PR route, you've got to find the right PR rep. They are not all built the same. They're not all equal. And so you really want to interview and you want to find the person that has the relationships with the news media that doesn't promise you to me. I interviewed PR people years ago and it wasn't the right fit, but they would all promise me like, hey, you're going to give me this much money. I'm going to get you at least this many appearances a month. The PR rep that, that I've been engaged with for the last 2 or 3 years, she's never said, I promise you, I'm going to get you on, but it'll be like 1 month, we have 4 or 5 hits. Another month, maybe we have 1. And it all balances out, but it's not a promise of delivery because it's not about quantity. It's about quality. So finding someone too, that understands who you are, that jives with you, that you can go get a meal with or coffee or a beer or a martini, and you can like really have conversations with, because you want to work with people that you want to work with. Also, you want them to understand who you are. If they don't know who you are as a person, they're going to start hooking you up with the wrong media stuff. You're going to be standing in front of the camera and you're going to be like, I don't even know what I'm talking about. And it's going to, it will go away. The other thing is, the final thing is, it's, you have seen, and everyone out there has seen, where someone's been on the news or a podcast or something, and it's painful. You're watching them stammer, stutter, sweat, sway. You know, it is just not a good fit. So I think the first thing to do is look yourself in the mirror before you even go down that path and go, how would I be on TV? You know, what would it feel like to be standing in front of a camera knowing that 30,000, 40,000, 50, 100, 200,000 people are watching me right now? Mm-hmm. How would it feel to be on camera knowing that this nationally syndicated program is going to put my face out in front of 1 million people in 17 different markets? Like, if you freak out, or if you go, yeah, I'm not cut out for it, then you shouldn't do it. If you go, I think I'd be okay. Like, that sounds like fun. And I have a message that I want to deliver. Like, to me, this is about spreading the real word, not what people are taking and chopping up and digesting and spitting back out, but like, hey, statistically, here's what we're seeing. Here's what we're seeing in the market. Here's as an active agent is what I'm seeing, not what people are talking about, but this, right? So it gives me a platform to say what I want to say to the audience and hopefully help people out there, but also get to my clients and my network and deliver to them a message that I truly believe in. So if you don't believe the message, if you don't believe in yourself, you shouldn't do it. If you believe the message, you believe in yourself, you think it's going to help, you think you're going to look, you know, it's going to be similar but different, and you think you have good things to say, then find that right PR rep and go down the rabbit hole and see what happens.
I mean, as it relates to this strategy, do you think that the lowest hanging fruit, aka the opportunity that exists with to be wanted by the outlets, the news outlets, because I've heard that they actually are always hungry for to have their person that they can quickly reach out to when something's in the headlines, right? This just happened to us last week. The New York Times reached out to Tristan and wanted to interview somebody in the mortgage business about their take on the NAR verdict. And he came to me and I put it in somebody's lap. And I was just like, this is, and a couple people turned me down. And I'm like, dude, you realize nobody has the answers right now, but this is an opportunity to potentially make a relationship and be that person that now the New York Times wants to interview. You can't buy that kind of opportunity. I mean, you can, but it'll cost you a lot of money. And so what you're doing here is you're paying a PR firm who's getting you the exposure to the right people. Would you say that the best topics, back to the low-hanging fruit, is typically what's hot and in the news? Because if you try to give them something that is not newsworthy, they're not going to jump on it. They want something that is clickbait, effectively. It's what the news outlets do. So if you had any advice on topics, as you say, choose your kind of niche or choose your topic, what do you think would be the easiest opportunity to actually penetrate and create opportunities?
Yeah, it's 100% about giving them what they want. Give the people what they want, right? To your point, the news people are looking to, there's competition in that newsroom. Hey, who's going to get the airtime? There's competition. They are all gunning to be the next anchor. They're all gunning for the next biggest market. And so they want to give the people what they want. And so, yes, it is hot topic. I think that topical stuff comes up all the time. Hey, the NAR verdict, the NAR settlement, people want to know right now what's going on with that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, in those searches, the 700% up, 800% up, da da da, you may be seeing things in the tea leaves that the news isn't yet. And then you have an opportunity to send them, hey, people are asking this question. You may not see it on the news yet, but you'll get the scoop, right? So it's emerging trends, and it's just the hot topic. The hot topic tends to be the one where the inbound call comes. Hey, is Trevor available tomorrow at 10 a.m. to talk about the thing? The other stuff is, hey, we wrote the blog, we did all this stuff for this one topic that is trending and is coming out and is really important, and we really want to get our word out about it. And then they'll take it and they'll look at it. They'll do their research. They'll go, yeah, that is trending and that is cool. Maybe we can get a jump on this particular story, and they'll run with it. So twofold: one, what's emerging and what do we think is important and why, and how can we turn that and show the news this is important and here's why, here's how it's affecting consumers right now. That's an important thing to do. And then the other one is, yeah, just jumping on the hot topic and rolling and putting something together that makes sense and that can break down a very complex situation into finite little snackable bites for the news to gobble up.
I like that, because you're basically now, it's like I teach loan officers, like you have to learn what real value is to a real estate agent. And most loan officers haven't figured that out. Just like a lot of realtors have a hard time figuring out what real value to a consumer is. They think consumers actually are interested in, you know, market trends and Monday market updates on social. They're not, right? And now it's like, okay, figure out what the media needs and help them, help that reporter effectively get ahead to create opportunities for themselves, which will create opportunities for you. Yeah. I love that, man. What is something that someone can expect? So if somebody wanted to go down this path, you know, do you have any idea? And I know you probably know this from what you pay, but what does a PR firm charge for doing this? How does that work?
It is so wide. I mean, you could pay 10 grand a month to a PR firm, or you could pay on a limited basis. Like if it's story by story, it could be, let's call it $500 a story. hey, I've got this thing and a reporter who wants to do a story on this. Are you cool with it? Like, you can set up whatever makes sense for you. So let's call it, you know, I think a good range to think of for a good PR firm, maybe just a one PR individual. That's who she operates her own business, but she's an Emmy award-winning reporter. You know, she anywhere from, depending on the engagement, I think she'll go to $3,500, $5,000 a month, but it could be, you know, for a reasonable one, $2,000 to $5,000 a month is what I would probably account for.
Got it. Got it. And if you're executing at a high level on a YouTube, for example, a videographer and video editing and all that can easily run every bit of that.
You got it. And your time to put here's the script. Here's what I want to do. If you're spending 2-3 hours putting stuff together and editing and then filming and all of this stuff, when you add your time up and what is your value on an hourly rate plus the videographer, all of that, you're going to be at $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 a month anyways to oftentimes put out a product that looks just like the next dude that someone's going to scroll to on their feed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I think one of the things I took most, even over everything else, which this has been great, is that when you say, make sure it's something that you believe in, and I would even take it one step further and say, make sure it's something that you're confident in. And the sad thing is if you're not confident to talk about today's topics that affect your industry, I think you need to take a look in the mirror about how dedicated you are to your craft. Because if you're not taking the time, like over the last week and a half, if the NAR verdict sadly hasn't consumed you, that you're not at least learning. I'm not saying getting sucked in and having doomsday mental thoughts and putting yourself in a depressed state of mind, but you're learning so you can navigate and know how to have the being proactive, right? And knowing how to pivot or how you're going to create opportunity out of this, then I would seriously question your own existence as a real estate agent.
And, I think
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think you're nailing it. Like if you don't know your own industry enough to effectively speak to it, when your clients call you, go, hey, what's up with this NAR verdict? If you can't even articulate that, then you're in trouble.
You're screwed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it, dude. This has been fruitful because it's unique. And I love the thought process. And I know you probably don't know the statistic, but my guess is there's probably a lot of opportunity in a lot of cities to be this person, because there's probably not a proactive real estate agents that are actively trying to seek the news outlets to provide them the value. And that's where you can truly differentiate yourself and truly make a name for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. There are some stories, like some reporters will say, you know, we like to get a couple of perspectives. Mm-hmm. And totally cool. Do it. Get it. But then you look at, sometimes I'll look at, you know, where we shoot or how we approach it, how we look, our take on it. And then they cut to the next agent sitting in their home office, you know, with a camera looking up their nose, grainy video and all this stuff. And it's like, so do you think the news is going to go back to that person or come back to me? Right. So even if you get wedged in and you do a really good job, your opportunity for the next one comes around, because they're often not going to go back to the one that doesn't shoot with quality or speak with conviction. And that's why I'll say no. There have been times where my PR rep will call and go, hey, opportunity to go on channel, whatever, today at 5 to talk about the thing. And I'm like, I do not want to talk about the thing. I either don't know it well enough, or it's a little bit, that's more mortgage than where I am. Like, I don't know. That's just not my thing. I don't want to talk about it. So I know by saying no, I may be preventing future opportunity, but I'm also preserving my own integrity and preserving what I think to my audience. If I don't believe in it, like if I'm standing in front of a camera, like, hey, it's my monthly video time that goes out to my network. If I stand in front of a camera and I try to say the topic, I try to discuss it. If I have to stop and start over 3 times, I quit. Because if I have to do it more than 3 times, I don't even believe the words that are coming out of my mouth, or the topic isn't good enough for me to really like be able to speak and flow about it. So I go, okay, well, give it another couple of days. Let's see what other topic I come up with or whatever. So to that point, yeah, if you're not convicted, If you don't know what you're talking about, if you're not excited, if you can't stand out from the crowd in your delivery of something, the route probably isn't, the PR route probably isn't the best route for you.
It's good stuff, man. I think you gave our audience a whole another slew of things to potentially think about and some potential bullets to put into their gun. Trevor, if somebody want to reach out to you, what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, sure. Honestly, message me on Instagram at Halpern Residential, or you can call me or text me at 602-595-4200. Direct line to me.
That's awesome. That's not your burner phone.
It's a little bit of a burner, but it comes to me too, but yeah. I can turn it off if I want.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And nice. Yeah. Perfect. Awesome. I appreciate that. So it's Halpern, Halpern Residential. You can find him that way on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, probably all the channels, right? But DM specifically, you mentioned on Instagram, I could see you getting some reach outs for some people wanting some advice on this strategy, because I think it could be a good one and it's a unique one. And man, I'll tell you what, it's all about differentiation nowadays. You've got to figure your thing out. And if you continue to just, you know, follow the leader, and monkey see monkey do, you're going to find yourself struggling for the foreseeable future, if not forever. And, Trevor, you're clearly a pioneer. You are a trailblazer. I love what you're doing. I look forward to meeting you in person. I know at the time of this recording, this will have, you know, by the time it comes out, we will have met, and hopefully, we still like each other. And, I look forward to staying in touch, brother.
Right on. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thank you. Having me on.
This episode of the Lab Coat Agents podcast is brought to you by RedX, the complete real estate prospecting solution. RedX offers high quality lead data on expireds, for sale by owners, vacant rental property owners, pre-foreclosures, and geo leads, the number one data source for neighborhood prospecting. You can also filter, organize, and call your leads inside Vortex, the all-in-one lead management platform, free with any lead subscription. With RedX, you get more than just phone numbers. You get all the tools you need to connect with more homeowners who are actively looking to sell. RedX is offering our listeners $150 off. Just go to redx.bz/LCA. That's redx.bz/LCA to sign up for RedX today. Lab Coat Agents Podcast.